Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm your host, Gina Kaufman, sitting here with local artist Shane Evans. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning.
Shane is with us today to talk about a children's book he's illustrated. It's called Mixed Me, and it's all about growing up mixed race. The author, Tay Diggs, is Shane's friend, and he stirred up controversy, the author did, when he said that he wanted his own son to see himself as mixed rather than black. In a country where a biracial president is considered the first black president, that's come as kind of a jarring statement to a lot of people. Shane, have you been surprised by the controversy around Mixed Me and around Tay Diggs' comments?
No, I guess it's simplest, you know. But yeah. I don't know if you want me to elaborate on
it. Yeah, please elaborate.
I mean, controversy is there prior to us in our existence, so, you know. No one really stirred controversy up. He just spoke his heart. You know, he's a person, I guess, and that's how I see it. Of course, that, you know, if we have a feeling on something, we have to express it. So I guess those words motivated people to speak their hearts and minds through social media. So it's just a response, I guess, at best.
Yeah, let's start at the beginning. What's basically the plot of Mixed Me?
Oh, my gosh. The plot. Let me go to the beginning. I mean, you know, I'm looking at it right now. If you have the book in front of you, maybe pull it out, perhaps. But Mixed, you know, the end papers begin the plot. And it's a series of juice boxes that I thought very heartfeltly about in terms of figuring out what these juices would taste like. Blended joy, mixed marvel, merged medley. You know, and then so you start there, and then the plot line starts with the idea of about mixed me. That's the plot.
Yeah.
Right. And so then, you know, there's a little dog there, too. He's part of the plot. And I think you work from there. I mean, books are charted in a very specific way. I've been doing this for like 15 plus years or so. But I look at it in days. You know, how many days have I done this? So I've been doing this since I was a 5-year-old. And so then the plot line just continues of a child's day.
Yeah.
You know, what is that like? You know, if you have children, you process the child's day by saying, how was your day? And then that's such an abstract question that most of them can't really tell you. They just would walk in and
they start naming things that happened.
Exactly. You know, and then there's another plot line. There's a subplot. Like if a child doesn't want to say or feels like somewhat embarrassed about letting a parent know that they felt what we call bullied, then, you know, they have to navigate that experience and that feeling or emotion by themselves, through themselves. But then, you know, sometimes, you know, that we can. Children are very good at working things out. So we give them the opportunity by being in school settings to appreciate what's going on in the world. And that's kind of the subplot. But love is the real one. You know, that's the love plot.
Yeah, one of the things that happens is this kid goes to school and his parents, who are not of the same race as one another, will pick him up or do things with him. And the kids at school are like scratching their heads and telling him things like your parents don't match and things like that. And so the kid is having to kind of figure out his own feelings about this and comes to the conclusion like, kids are calling him mixed up, and he says, no, I'm not mixed up. I'm just mixed. Would you say that that the message, I mean, if you had to summarize a message from the book, what would you say it is?
Summary of a book,
yeah.
You know, summary of a book. Summary of a book.
And the message, the message that you think a kid is supposed to take from this.
Be yourself. Like, at simplest, again. I mean, people always ask questions about these children's books and who are they for. The one response that I get from parents is that they wish that they had a book like this when they were children. So then they, as consumers, I mean, if we look at it that way, they want to buy for their child in a way that says that this is the truth. So I think that in some ways that they know that children are going to go out into the world, they're going to hear things. And so it's always good to sit with children in a book and a page or a story. And that's what this is, you know, it's a story.
What made you want to take on this project as an illustrator?
Because I am this child and because I am a parent as well.
What do you mean when you say you are this child?
I mean, you know, I grew up in the same household, two different people. you know, and I say it like that because, you know, I don't know, we could talk about race all day, but it's not really what it's about. It's two different people that are raising you. And so I am a child of, you know, I could say I'm a child of a divorce, you know, experience, but that doesn't make me any less, you know, whatever it is, loved. So I think that, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, what is difference? Difference is from a child's viewpoint. Sometimes it's very complicated. You don't know what it is.
Yeah, especially while it's happening.
There you go. So then, you know, when a child is asked a question off beat, and I say it like that, where they're like, why would you ask if that's my mother? Like, why wouldn't it be? You know, it should be the real good response. But, you know, I don't know, sometimes we learn when someone asks a question that we have to answer. But the truth is you can remain silent on matters. And I think that's what happens in the book. There's a page where everybody wants to touch this child. And I think Tay's experience around that was, you know, like children, people want to touch his son's hair out of nowhere. And, you know, that is a violation to some people, you know. And to be honest, if you're in a scenario where you don't feel comfortable, then, you know, it's your right to say no.
And the kid does kind of develop the confidence to say, you can't touch my hair.
Correct, correct.
You know, talk to me more about the hair, because as an illustrator making artistic decisions, the hair is a big part of this plot, the story itself. Mm-hmm. And you must have worked and put some serious thought into how to portray this, like, in some ways, a character in the book.
Serious thought, I would say more. It just went from Tay and I sitting down, and I made his hair kind of short, and he was like, no, make it crazy, you know? And that literally was the art direction from this friend of mine, you know? And so when I perceived the idea of, again, like, crazy is such a loaded term, but it's like, let his hair follicles just do what they may, you know, given the wind and given the fact that, you know, he may get up on one side of the bed wrong. And, you know, even that thing right there, the hair visual is like, I could have made him shaved close to the head kind of, you know, haircut. But you're right. It's a part of the plot. But in some ways, he's like the little lion, you know, with a big giant mane, like a lion without a mane is a cub. And so he's the lion in this book, in a way. And he just expresses himself with his hair and through his hair.
Do you think that part of the problem and how people have responded to the book comes from just maybe that even among really like what you might consider racially progressive people, there's still not a lot of agreement on what constitutes a healthy attitude toward biracial identity?
Oh, man, that's such a complex question. I would say, I don't know. Yes, but, you know, if you want to understand who I am, you just come and ask me at simplest, you know. And, you know, I see you got a beautiful, colorful scarf on right now.
Thank you.
Right, it's beautiful. And, you know, if you see the scarf that I have on right now, I'm sure it might offend somebody, you know?
Why would it offend somebody?
I'm wearing, what do you see it? How do you see the scarf?
Well, it is wrapped around you, so I really just see two colors, like a maroon and a, and like a taupe.
You see it now?
Oh, no, yeah. I see that it is the American flag. I had only been seeing the red and not quite white, but white-ish stripes.
Okay, so here's a very interesting experience, right? Now that I uncovered what I'm wearing, you see it as an American flag. So if I walk down some streets in America, I'm sure somebody be like, why are you wearing that?
And possibly offended because it's wrapped up and not like unfurled as a flag or something?
I mean, that's a possibility. But if someone asked me why I was wearing it, I'd say to keep my neck warm. I mean, you see what I mean? It's like, it's always a perception. It's a matter of like what your position on this topic is, you know? And so if you come at me and like, you know, biracial, you know, that's offensive to me. I'm like, okay, well, here I am. You know, this is my mother and this is my father. You know love? Like, yes or no? And I think that's kind of what it is about. You know, if people gain controversy out of this, that's fine. I think that is okay. I do subjugate the idea that Where the Wild Things Are gained lots of controversy when it came out. You could Google, YouTube it, listen to Maurice's concepts about what happened when that book came out. It stirred a lot of people, you know. And now we look at it as a classic. And so I think in some ways, you know, this character comes from the tradition of children's books. Like, that's who he is.
Just to explain the controversy itself a little more, there are kind of two arguments. You've got one side saying that calling someone mixed is a denial of blackness, and that the desire to say that might even come from a place of shame. Mm-hmm. But I've also read an argument, a really interesting argument, that the history of defaulting to the label of black when describing biracial people is actually rooted in the customs and attitudes of slavery and protecting white slave owners who might not have wanted to recognize their part in creating mixed race offspring. So based on like that logic, a lot of people think, yeah, we should be owning really both sides of a person's heritage. Do those two arguments, like, it sounds to me like you kind of operate from a place of like, just see me as a human and ask me my story. And I wonder if either of those arguments, though, really resonates with you.
Oh, okay. So I can pull out into a larger visual. Okay, we can go out into time because I've touched a lot of these different topics, slavery being one. One, I could ask the question, what color is slavery? Now, then from there, you know, you got to fill in this space, you know, like those who are enslaved, it's really just a mentality. So, you know, if we're talking about white slave owners, who is white? And then you kind of go back way, way deeper into the collective consciousness. There are a lot of human beings that came over here that look like me that were never slaves. And so then you have to free yourself from different ideas. So like if today was 150 years ago, who would we be, you and I? And so I think that's really just a matter of like who we are now. And that's, you know, I think it's just a matter of timing.
Well, what do you think? We'd love to hear from any of our listeners, especially biracial listeners, on this question of how to identify, as well as parents of mixed-race children. I'm Gina Kaufman. KCUR's Central Standard will be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and I'm joined by Shane Evans. He's the illustrator of a children's book called Mixed Me, written by his friend Tay Diggs. We're talking about whether identifying as mixed, rather than, in the case of the child in the book, black, is a sign of pride or an act of denial. Call 816-235-2888 to weigh in, and do it now because we've got just a little time left. 816-235-2888. And Shane, we were talking earlier about how, you know, no matter what your background is, unless your parents are somehow clones of one another, you know, you come from two different places. You come from two different experiences. Mm-hmm. There's something to be assimilated in you, no matter who you are. Can you talk a little more about that? I think it's kind of beautiful because it universalizes this experience that might seem so particular.
Right. I get that. I mean, it's like here, the biggest way for me to see it now is that I get contextual responses from all over the world through social media. Okay. So we have a Mixed Me Facebook page, and I just quantify it with numbers because it's a good thing to do. Because it's math. It's like, okay, on January 1st or so of this year, I started a Facebook page. And in the first week, we got 1,000 likes. And then the next week, 2,000, 3,000. And it went up to 20-something thousand likes. So to me, the vernacular coming from all over the world is that we identify with this experience, not just the words, it's the experience. So I think quantifiably so. I mean, somebody might get upset about, you know, a word that's true, but I don't mean it that way. And I think that's kind of where I can take the position that I just don't mean it that way. And if I can help clear anyone's thoughts about it, I'm happy to do it.
Let's talk to Becky in Parkville. Hi, Becky.
Good morning. Unfortunately, I will confess I have not read the book yet, but it's definitely on my radar for Christmas time.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. My husband and I are both white. We are adoptive parents of a biracial and a multiracial child.
Okay.
And so we often get the looks, the questions, the confusion of,
right.
you know, people trying to figure out how does that jigsaw puzzle stick together? Because from the outside, we don't match.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty involved with my kids' extracurricular activities. And so I am directly involved from the kids saying, that's your mom.
Right.
That's not your mom.
That's not your mom. No way.
Yeah.
Right.
And we've learned to just be really direct with it and just say, you know, every family looks a little different.
True.
Some families look very much the same. Some don't.
True.
Every family is built a little bit differently, and this is what our family looks like.
Becky, do you wrestle with labels in sort of the way that we've been discussing? I mean, as far as, you know, with a biracial child and a mixed race, a multi-race child, you know, when they are asked to check off a box someday on a form and things like that. I mean, labels, we don't like them, but they're part of the society we live in. Is that a discussion that you've had?
We do have it once in a while. They're both pretty young. They're only 6 and 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So the discussions are, I try not to make them too serious yet. But we also need to prepare them for the world that, you know, we don't really talk about race a whole lot because luckily we don't have to deal with it. But I also understand that when they're older, they're going to hear some things that they're not used to. And I'm going to have to prepare them for how to handle it. There was a day my daughter came home and we said something about her being black. This was my biracial daughter. And she said, Mom, I am not black.
Okay.
And I said, well, you know, your birth father was black. And she said, but Mom, look at me. I'm brown.
I'm brown.
Yeah. Shane, what do you think of this?
Well, little sister on the other end of this phone named Becky, thank you so much for sharing your heart, one. And then, you know, as a mother, I'm going to be honest from my perspective. You probably don't care much about what people say, really, when it really, really comes down to it, because you love them beyond any measure of what some might call hopelessness, you know. So you just got to stay strong with that focus. And then as a family, you just have to receive the blessings of people asking questions. There's another element to it, that if someone is bold and fearless enough to ask, you should be bold and fearless enough to help them. You know, it's not about explanation. You don't owe anybody anything. Help them to see the love between you all. And that's very, is very important. And then, to be honest, I'm going to just put it like this. Go off of the shores of the United States and show all of your whole family how blessed they are. You know, as soon as I landed in another place like Brazil and didn't speak the language, but everybody thought I was Brazilian, I was very, very happy about this skin I'm in.
That her daughter wants to be called brown,
yes,
is interesting. What do you think about it?
That particular, you know, quotient, like if she said, I want to be called rainbow color, you would honor that. You know what I mean? That's what we do as parents. Well, your baby girl, you're a rainbow then, you know, and you celebrate that. And if you call somebody out of their name, I've had some very interesting discussions about the word black with editors. You know, this word didn't exist at one point in time as a descriptor. And then all of a sudden it became part of our vernacular. So we can change our household content and say, you know, I'm green today. And somebody might laugh about it, but it's just as ridiculous when you think about it as calling someone black. That's what she's saying.
Let's talk to Stacy calling us from Olathe. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. Hello. I love this conversation, by the way. Thanks for having it. I'm a black woman. I'm married to a white man. We have two small girls. They're 5 and 6. And even before the children were born, my husband and I started to have these types of conversations. He's from a small town in Nebraska where there's just not a lot of black people. Mm-hmm. So this idea of race identity, how are the children going to identify themselves, was something that a conversation that we've been having sort of ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure we even have answers. And I love these types of discussions because I think they have to keep going. One of the things that my husband and I have sort of landed on is this idea that, you know, green, you mentioned green.
Mm-hmm.
No one looks at green and says, well, it's denying its blueness.
Right.
You know, or green, it has to sort of claim its yellowness.
Right.
And so I kind of, unfortunately, that's not the way people are going to look at our children.
Right.
They're going to say, oh, well, they're going to label them as black.
Right.
Although they really don't and honestly, they don't look
right,
black, honestly.
Right, right.
Very interesting situation in the hospital. However,
yeah.
So to me, I think that as a conversation, we still need to continue to have, as a society, we need to have these conversations just to sort of start moving beyond.
I love that. I love that. And then, Stacey, you know, through the silence, one can hear that there's something that happened at the hospital, for example, right? Perhaps a weird mm-hmm. mix-up or a question from somebody in authority. And I think that that's really what it starts to come down to. Authorship is self. And then, you know, when your children start to scream, in the beginning, you know that they're hungry. You know, it takes a little time to understand the voice, but our voices are the things that are have to be heard. And so, you know, if you start to rearticulate, and you know, Chocolate Me is Chocolate Me.
A previous book.
Yeah, came before Mixed Me. And that one got lots of controversy as well. Now I'm saying Chocolate Me. Now think of how ridiculous it is to call oneself chocolate, yet at the same time there's something glorious about it. And so, you know, we are who we are, and there are some realities that each family will have to deal with, but they're only day-by-day realities. If we think about them too large, then we won't really know how to address it in the calm. If you ever see a child fall and they're processing whether it hurts, and then you go at the situation, you go, oh, you're good. You're fine.
You know, I'm interested in this comment of that blue, if we call something blue, no one, or that we call something yeah, green, no one accuses us of
right.
denying blueness. Or
the blueness, though. So.
It's, there is, though, I think that the idea of calling someone mixed being somehow a denial of blackness does probably come from a place of historic pain.
So we're talking storyline. All right, so then let's say the answer is yes. So then now we resolved it. And if, you know, if mixed is something different to me, like Chocolate Me is something different than it's licking my skin, please don't do that. You know what I'm saying? You know, if I call myself by a particular name, there are names out there and words that people call themselves that I find very offensive. They say the N-word as if I can't say that out loud, but everybody knows it. Same as when you listen to the radio. There's all kinds of words on there that you probably don't want your children to be listening to now. So I think it's just a matter of self-censorship and reemergence of self, like I am who I am.
And that how other people see you is kind of a secondary question.
I would say yes.
Let's talk to Mike in Olathe. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about you?
All as well.
I'm doing very well, and I appreciate this conversation.
Give thanks.
What can you share?
Well, I just wanted to echo the little girl who said, you know, I'm not black, I'm brown. I have always called myself gold because
yeah, I love it.
I am light-skinned. I was called light, bright, almost white, and those kinds of things. But it was always important to me to acknowledge that my mother, who raised me, a white woman,
yes,
that it be clear that,
yes,
yes, I am mixed.
Yes.
I am not just a black man.
Right.
I am
right.
I am that, but I am more than that.
Right, and I love that.
It was very important for me always to forthrightly put that out there. And now that I have children with a white woman,
right,
the challenges that I find are making sure that they understand that they have a heritage, that because we don't live in a quote-unquote black neighborhood, that they understand that they share that heritage. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like I'm striving to not say to know that they're black,
right,
but
right,
to know that they do share that heritage. And
right.
Because I don't want them to be, you know, the kind of quote-unquote white person that doesn't that's not tolerant because they aren't aware of that, or you know what I mean?
Right. But that's not an accusation. The same as if you said that black person that is not tolerant, or that Spanish person that is not tolerant, or that, you know, that Filipino person that is not. See, now I'm naming cultures, you know? And so once I start to switch it up for you and call you gold. See, it's golden. It's the golden self that, for me, represents the best self. You know, it's the one that
yeah.
you know you will pull back from making a prejudgment on a situation. And so then you pass that goldenness onto your family. That's a wonderful thing.
Mike, I want to ask you about a piece of this, which is that acknowledging that there is more to you that you come from more than one place, it seems like it's partly saying, you know, I have two parents, and of course, like, both of them are incredibly meaningful to me, and to disown either one would be a problem.
Right, right. No, absolutely. And it's clear without a doubt that, you know, I have Black parentage. It may be questionable on the other side. You know, somebody might just think, you know, I've known people who were as light as me that didn't have a quote-unquote white parent in the mix. But I have always wanted, again, to make it real clear that this is who I am, because I respect and honor my mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And I can't see her, but I care and respect for that woman as well, because I have a mother. You know, that's kind of where we're really at. And I think that, you know, if someone claims that mother is yours, that should be a joy for everyone. You know, no matter the contextualization of, you know, one's own self about what love is based in color and what it should be. You know, that's, we're going to fight through that for probably the remainder of our lives. But, you know, if I'm blind and I don't know what you look like, but I fall in love with you and the rest of the world is having an issue with it, I'm like, okay, well, close your eyes. I mean, and I feel like that, you know, that's the other reality of like where we are. We're overusing some of these ideas. I don't want to say let's kill them, but I did.
But you are, so as a visual artist, has it been an interesting experience for you to, it sounds like, be really in discussing your work, a big part of what you're discussing is these really huge issues.
Right.
And huge issues that I think you see in maybe a less charged way than a lot of people you're talking to see them.
Yes, but I switch it up. I am a musician, you know?
Yeah, you brought a guitar, which surprised me.
I mean, it surprises everyone. I am a musician. And, you know, people know me for being an illustrator. I am a musician. I am a storyteller at core. And so then, you know, I look at it that way. You know, if you really want to have a discussion about something, you know, Tay and I went and sat in the, I don't know, some kind of like at the Capitol building in Texas. And we were in these big cushy chairs and we were talking about mixed media. And it was like we were setting policy or something that day, even though it was a book festival that just happened to be there. So, you know, you speak over people's lives and sing over people's lives. You're honest from your perspective, best you can be. You know, I get it. There are problems out there. There are. But, you know, people rise up out of these things every day.
Let's talk quickly with Carol in Kansas City. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Carol. Good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Good morning. All is well.
What can you share?
Well, being of mixed race and having been through more than a generation, I've experienced quite a bit of difficulty, put it that way,
mm-hmm.
From both sides of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not visibly Black.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my siblings are. Mm-hmm. And I have found from the time I entered school, it was a problem. I was in the Jim Crow South, went to a Black school, and got personally attacked repeatedly, strictly for my color, being of mixed race.
And this was in the 50s, like, the 60s?
Yes. And at that time, though, early on, there was a distinction for people of mixed race,
mm-hmm.
that were Black and white. It was mulatto. Mm-hmm. There was quadroon. There was octoroon.
Mm-hmm.
But identifying the Black was important from the time of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
One drop, which has been the tradition in the South, meant you were Black. And the reason for that is you could be sold then,
mm-hmm.
if
mm-hmm.
you had even one drop.
Okay.
And I think this is a hangover,
right.
of the designation, not just that they were, you know, the product of slave owners,
right.
but that
right.
they could be sold.
Of sold.
Yeah.
Sold.
I have found every form mm-hmm. that I have to fill out, mm-hmm. be it for school, be it the census, be it
yeah.
the job application, requires race, and there is no room for mixed race.
Thank you so much, Carol. Tay, you know, I mean, Tay, I just right. called you by the author's
that's
name.
It. That's good.
Shane.
Yes.
You know, what do you think of that? We just have a minute left, but
1 minute, oh,
or
wow.
less than that, even.
I think forgiveness is due today for all the things that have been done to people wrong, and people know it. And so then today is this day to release and let it go. That's the truth.
Our time is up for today's show. Shane Evans, Kansas City artist and illustrator of Mixed Me, thanks for taking on this huge topic with us today. If you've enjoyed hearing from the Kansas contestant on Project Runway Junior earlier in the show, you can catch the show and follow his progress on Lifetime. The show airs Thursdays at 8. To listen back to either of this morning's conversations, head to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, a show on maternity leave in Kansas City. What works, what doesn't, and how working mothers navigate those realities. That discussion tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for Up to Date next.